Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Vallabha Girivada Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Kiravana Chari Kiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Vallabha Girivada Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Kiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Vallabha Girivada Dhari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Vallabha Girivada Dhari Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajaka Acharya Stotra Sattva Shri Srimad. His divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki ji. Ananta Kota Vaishnavinda ki ji. ISKCON founder Acharya Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki ji. Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishtaya Bhutalaya Shumate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gurudavani Vishwani Yira Vishyashu Srinivari Prasad Hare Krishna. This morning, last day of 2020. Still got a few hours left for some surprises if you're interested. But we're studying for Srimad Bhagavatam as we do every day. First canto, chapter 10, text number 25. Chapter is entitled Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. Yada yada me natamo divyo nirpa Jivanti tasrai Jivanti tasrai sa hi sattva kila Jivanti tasrai sa sattva kila Dathe bhagam satyam vitam dayam yaso Avaya Rupani Dada Yuge Yuge
Avaya Rupani Dada Yuge Yuge
Yada Yadamena Tamo Di Jivanti tat raisa hi sattva bhila.
Jivanti tat raisa hi sattva
bhila. Tate bhagam satyam nirtavitam dayam niso.
Tate bhagam satyam nirtavitam dayam niso.
Avaya rupani dada yuge yuge. Yada yada mena tamo diyo nirpa.
Yada yada mena tamo diyo nirpa.
Jivanti tas raisa hi sattva ta kila.
Jivanti tas raisa sattva ta kila.
Tate bhagam satyam ritam dayam yaso.
Tate bhagam satyam ritam dayam yaso.
Avaya rupani dada yuge yuge. Translation purport of His Divine Grace as He walked around the Swami Prabhupada. So what I'm going to do this morning, the purport's a little long, but it's conveniently broken up into three paragraphs which deal with progressive topics that I want to speak on. So first of all, I'm going to read the translation to this verse, and then we'll cover the purport chapter by chapter as comments are being made during the reading. Translation. Whenever there are kings and administrators living like animals in the lowest mode of existence, the Lord in his transcendental form manifests his supreme power, the truth positive, shows special mercy to the faithful, performs wonderful activities, and manifests various transcendental forms as is necessary in different period and ages. Om Gyanatim Randa Shaganam Janashalakaya Chakshum Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this verse and the purport, as we'll see, very closely tracks two other Vedic literatures, one the Bhagavad Gita, and two the Sri Ishupanishad. You recall that the verse in Bhagavad Gita is Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya Gnaniya Bhavati Bharata Abhyutanam Adharmasya Tadatmanam Sujamiyaham. This verse also begins with Yada, and it's whenever. It's in the translation. The Bhagavad Gita verse is Yada Yada, whenever and wherever. And so the same meaning is conveyed, particularly we'll see as we get into the purport about what the translation, how the translation is elaborated, translation referring to administrators and kings who act like animals. Prabhupada, very descriptive there, animals. So it tracks Bhagavad Gita and also tracks the Sri Ishupanishad. I'd like to read the invocation to Sri Ishupanishad and the first two mantras to give you some, to help set the setting for what we're going to be discussing. So the invocation, Om Purnamidat Purnamidam, Purnat Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya Purnam Adaya, Purnam Ivavasishyate. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Mantra number one, Isha Vashyam Idam Sarvam Yat Kinchat Jigat Tam Jigat Tena Twaktena Bunjita Ma Gridha Swastidhanam. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. This is an important point, recognizing that everything is controlled and owned by the Lord. God is ultimately a person, and he owns it, just like we're persons and we may own different things. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. And finally for today, mantra number two, Kurvan evaha karmani jivivekshat chitam sama evam twayi nanyate tosti na karma vipyate nare. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the laws of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. Sri Ishupanishad ki jai. So, these verses in Bhagavad Gita and Sri Ishupanishad, as I said, set the scene for today's Srimad Bhagavatam verse. And they set the scene by describing or picturing what our duties and obligations are. It's not that we come to this world and we don't have any duties or obligations. We're obligated in so many ways. Not just to our parents who give us birth, but to great sages, to governmental administrators, to educators, teachers, philosophers. They have set the scene for our appearance in this world. And therefore, our appearance is not without duties and obligations. Actually, if you think about it, law and order is what is a common buzzword for politicians. They want to have law and order, and people, yes, we should have law and order. And what does that mean? Well, for the mundane kings who tend to forget that, as we'll see, it means that property rights are respected, that you can walk safely anywhere without fear of bodily harm. Law and order guarantees these things, and they are very attractive. But unfortunately, that law and order develops from what? Where does it develop? Where does it come from? Where do our obligations or duties come from? Well, the Shri Upanishad describes they come from a person, the Supreme Lord. And so just as we want law and order, he also wants law and order. And he's willing, and he has made a situation for us that if we follow our duties and obligations, we can therefore, as it's described in the mantra number 2, we can live peacefully in this world for hundreds of years. That's actually the circumstances in which all of us appear in this material world. Everything is arranged perfectly by the Supreme Lord. All that's needed is present. And we just have to follow the rules. And if we follow the rules, even in Sri Upanishad it says that we can go on living in this material world for hundreds of years, it says. It's all set up. But we have to respect law and order. We have to perform our duties, and we have to meet our obligations. And if we do that, we can actually have a relationship with the Supreme Lord, because he set up everything for us to fit very nicely in there. But the problem is what's described in this verse today. And so we'll look at the purport, paragraph by paragraph, and get some idea about why things aren't wonderful like they should be. So the purport by Srila Prabhupada. As mentioned above, the cosmic creation is the property of the Supreme Lord. This is the basic philosophy of Isha Upanishad. Everything is a property of the Supreme Being. No one should encroach upon the property of the Supreme Lord. One should accept only what is kindly awarded by him. Therefore, the earth or any other planet or universe is the absolute property of the Lord. The living beings are certainly his parts and parcels, or sons, and thus every one of them has a right to live at the mercy of the Lord to execute his prescribed work. That sentence explains it all. We are sons of the Supreme Lord, and we have a right, Prabhupada says in his prayer, we actually have a right. So there are rights in spiritual life as well. We have a right to live at the mercy of the Lord, just like any child has the right to expect from his parents food, shelter, clothing, and love. Indeed, that's how love develops, by providing food, clothing, and shelter to a newborn infant. What's the result? How does the infant reciprocate? He develops love. for the Supreme Lord. So love can actually come out of these obligations. We shouldn't forget that. But we come and we have prescribed work. And if we follow that, then we have a right to be maintained by the Lord without any difficulty. Prabhupada continues, no one, therefore, can encroach upon the right of another individual man or animal without being so sanctioned by the Lord. The king or the administrator is the representative of the Lord to look after the management of the Lord's will. He must, therefore, be a recognized person like Maharaj Parikshit or Maharaj Yudhisthira or Parikshit. Such kings have full responsibility and knowledge from authorities about the administration of the world. So God, the Lord's will here includes administrative governance. But what's the purpose of that? Law and order, to make sure that the living entities don't encroach upon what the other living entity has. In the purport in the Ishupanishad, it's described very nicely, gives an example about how there's an interdependence that should, if we have knowledge of it, it should steer us away from encroaching upon others' rights or others' dependence on the Supreme Lord. The example given is of a cow. Now, a cow gives milk, but the cow doesn't drink milk. What is given for the cow?
Grass.
So the cow is given grass for his foodstuff, but she produces milk for human consumption. So we can take that milk, but we can't deny the cow the grass. The cow has a right to the grass. We have a right to the milk. But if we work cooperatively together, following our duties and obligations, then both of us benefit. Small example, but it can be extrapolated to how the whole universe works. There's a natural order that protects everyone. And the king or the administrator has the responsibility, has the duties and obligations to make sure that none of this encroaching on another's rights is violated. He has duties and obligations. So Prabhupada continues here. But at times, due to the influence of ignorance, the ignorance mode of material nature, tamaguna, the lowest of material modes, kings and administrators come into power without knowledge and responsibility, and such foolish administrators live like animals for the sake of their own personal interest. The result is that the whole atmosphere becomes surcharged with anarchy and vicious elements. Nepotism, bribery, cheating, aggression, and therefore famine, epidemic, war, and similar other disturbing features become prominent in human society. So of course, the material world we know is not a complete paradise, but at least the livable condition that has been set up by the Supreme Lord, where everyone is taken care of, and the Ishupanishad says can be lived for hundreds of years, that's the natural order of things. Not like 2000, we're just leaving 2020. It's been such an up and down year. So many miseries. It's not meant to be that. We kind of take it like that's normal. What are the difficulties? What are the problems? We think, well, that's normal, that's life. No, it's not. That's not how life is meant to be lived. The reason why it's so chaotic is because the duties and obligations aren't being followed by, it starts with the kings or the administrators. And all these things, including epidemic, it's interesting. I never thought so much about disease being a problem. It's probably because they didn't study history. I mean, you study history, you see disease as a problem. But I never thought about it being such a problem. But this year has really accented that. Disease affecting the whole world in such a way that everything is topsy-turvy. And not being able to get a hold of it, it doesn't leave you much faith in our scientific endeavors. But it's on this list of things that happen when the kings start to neglect their duties and obligations. So maybe we should look there to try to find some solutions to the pandemic, besides just a vaccine or some miracle of modern medicine or something. What about this cause? It directly links, it probably directly links epidemic as a disturbing feature in how it become prominent in human society. So Prabhupada continues, and the devotees of the Lord or the faithful are persecuted by all means. All these symptoms indicate that the time of an incarnation of the Lord to reestablish the principles of religion and to vanquish the maladministrators. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. That's the next verse in Bhagavad Gita. I think it's the next one. Paritirnaya sadhanam vinyasa achaduskritam dharma samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. So the Lord comes as a result of these things. Now, we certainly want the Lord to come, but I mean, there's probably better ways than like screwing up the whole planet and everybody's lives to get him to incarnate. But he comes despite us. And we'll describe toward the end of the class why he comes despite all the maladministration or cheating or neglect of obligations and duties by the living entities. Despite all that, he still comes. And that's his most prominent feature. So that's why the place is kind of a chaotic, that's how it begins. So, how does it spread? The leaders, the administrators, the kings, they don't do their duty. And what is the verse we just heard today? You quoted it after Mother Mukhi read the section on Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Yes. Those leaders, by their actions, everyone follows their example. Now, of course, we just read about bad example of the administrators. So what happens when the administrators or kings set a bad example? You and me, ordinary persons, we follow that. We don't follow the good things, we follow the bad things. And the second paragraph in the verse here today describes that. Prabhupada says, the Lord then appears in his transcendental form without any tinge of material qualities. He descends just to keep the state of his creation in a normal condition. The normal condition is that the Lord has provided each and every planet with all the needs of the native living beings. They can happily live to execute their prescribed occupations to obtain salvation, following the rules and regulations mentioned in the revealed scriptures. So here it says, their predestined occupations. Again, we are born into this world with duties and obligations that must be performed. If they're not performed, then we become naughty boys, as described by Prabhupada in the purport. We become naughty boys. and that causes so much problems in the world. So we have to follow our prescribed duties. What do we mean when we say prescribed duties or predestined duties? What kind of things do you think that Prabhupada's referring to? Anybody have any idea? That's for the Vaishnavas, yes. Varnashram duties, yes. Any other duties? Well, primarily they're going to be following the Varnashram system. Again, it's the same fourth chapter, isn't it? Chaturvayam, Udukama Vibhagasa. So Varnashram duties, we have to follow, these things are obligatory. These things will help us lead a peaceful and happy life in line with the facility given to us by the Supreme Lord. But when we neglect those things, or we misuse those things, how did Kali Yuga begin? What was the first symptom of Kali Yuga beginning? What happened? Sringi. He was a Brahmin. He misused his authority, his power, his prescribed duties to curse Maharaj Pariksit. That opened the door for Kali to come in on all these things that are described. It says here that the material world is created to satisfy the whims of the Nitya Buddha, or everlasting conditioned souls, just as naughty boys are provided with playing cradles. Otherwise, there is no need for the material world. But when they become intoxicated with power from material science to exploit the resources unlawfully without sanction of the Lord, and that only for their sense gratification, there is a necessity of the Lord's incarnation to chastise the rebellious and to protect the faithful. So again, the point is being made, it doesn't have to be this bad in the world. It doesn't have to be this bad. But it will be that bad unless we follow our duties and obligations. And those have been outlined to us, Varnashram, Vaishnava, four regular principles as mentioned by Pran Govinda. We follow these things and life becomes, again, it's a material world. We want to paint it too broadly as being a wonderful place. There's still birth, death, old age, and disease, and different kind of miseries. But at least it's not going to be as bad as that, as it could be, if we follow that. And indeed, this is the difference, actually, between Vaishnava Dharma and Varnashram Dharma. Is that Vaishnava Dharma makes it, I mean, Varnashram Dharma, following those duties and obligations, that won't get us out of the world. We can live here peacefully for a long time, but it won't get us out of the world. Only when we take to Vaishnava duties and obligations do we start to exit this world. So we have to keep that in mind, but the point is, we have duties and obligations and we must take them. Now, when Prabhupada was traveling in 1976, he went to Mauritius. And when he was in Mauritius, he was talking about, you remember, about Mauritius becoming the first God-conscious country. And he pointed out several reasons why he thought that was possible. But when it came to Vedic society, the society that I'm explaining Varnashram duties come from, even Vaishnava duties, when it came to the rules and regulations, the duties and obligations that are necessary for society to become perfect, like Mauritius becoming the first God-conscious country, he said some things that are very, very interesting. Because if you've listened to this class for the last so many minutes, and heard the stress I'm putting on duties and obligations, laws, even material laws, law and order, you might think that law is going to be the primary thing that creates this heaven on earth in this material world. But you'd be mistaken, and Prabhupada spoke about this in Mauritius. He said that Vedic society is based on the principle of love between husband and wife, father and son, the king and the citizens, and so on. Here's the key phrase. Civilization must be founded on love, not law. By your law, you cannot make a person love you. First he must love you, then he will be glad to follow. First he must love you, then he will gladly follow your law. Modern civilization lacks this basis of love, so everything is superficial and false. But if devotion to Krishna is made the basic principle, then people will be happy. So you can't force people. If you want them to do their duties and obligations, you have to put it on the basis of love, not on the basis of just law. And that is the reason, that's the subject matter of the last of the purport, last paragraph in today's purport, which we'll go over now. It talks about the descent of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita also gives this, it says, Purachanai Sadhanam Vinishyata Duskritam. So their Duskriti, naughty boys, as Prabhupada said, they're naughty boys, and there are sadhus, sadhanam, Purachanai Sadhanam. So he comes for two purposes. Ultimately, there's one purpose, to show love to both the Duskritinas and the pious people. And so his appearance is full of loving pastimes, which are described in the third paragraph. Prabhupada says, when he descends, he exhibits superhuman acts just to prove his supreme right. And materialists like Ravana, Hiranyakasipu, Kamsa, are sufficiently punished. He acts in a manner which no one can imitate. For example, the Lord, when he appeared as Ram, bridged the Indian Ocean. When he appeared as Krishna, from his very childhood, he showed superhuman activities by killing Putana, Agasura, Sakatasura, Kaliya, etc. And then his maternal uncle, Kamsa. When he was at Dwarka, he married 16,108 queens, and all of them were blessed with sufficient number of children. The sum total of his personal family members amounted to about 100,000, popularly known as the Yaduvamsa. And again, during his lifetime, he managed to vanquish them all. He is famous as Govardhanadhari Hari, because he lifted at the age of only seven the hill known as Govardhan. The Lord killed many undesirable kings in his time, and as a Kshatriya, he fought chivalrously. He is famous as Asamordva, unparalleled. No one is equal to or greater than him. So this list of Krishna's pastimes, Rama's pastimes, actually, what gave the elderly gopis of Vrindavan much joy every day when they went about their tasks? Just to show you, it's not just the killing and the gashing, but it's the love behind these things that's the real force here. So what did the elderly gopis churning butter do related to this list of demons that Krishna killed here? Does anybody know? No, what would they be doing? His presence is there, but, well, okay, let me just... Yeah, they used to sing. Yeah, they would sing as they were doing their, in other words, Krishna's activities weren't just like killing and slashing and all that, but they were actually sources of joy for the gopis to relate as they were churning the butter. What about the Govardhan Leela? What was the real glory of the Govardhan Leela? That Krishna lifted a mountain? Well, the real glory was he was able to reciprocate with all of the residents of Vrindavan at one time, uninterrupted, for an entire week. He enjoyed loving exchanges with them. So it was a blissful, loving experience for all the residents of Vrindavan. It wasn't just like fearfully cowering at and seeking protection from Indra. But it was a way they exchanged love with Krishna. That was Krishna's real purpose. Even creating the bridge to Lanka, what was Ram doing? He was exhibiting his love for Sita. It wasn't just he was on some rescue mission or something like that. And so when the Lord appears, his devotees relish these wonderful pastimes. They relish the love. This is the love, not the law, that's being talked about. By enjoying this love, they gladly will do anything for Krishna. And so the duties and obligations don't appear like some burdensome thing, but it's a joyful, loving experience. And so this is what is all lost first when we start thinking of things in terms of laws instead of love. And then when we start breaking the laws for our own benefit, ignoring the fact that Krishna is the owner, the creator and owner of everything. That Krishna is a person. And that we should treat him like that, just like none of us would want to be ignored or belittled in any way, taken advantage of. So why should we think that we can do that with the Supreme Lord without consequences? Consequences are, and it's described here, what hell is created. Hell on earth is what we create by that, not heaven on earth. So these are some thoughts on the verse today. Anybody have any comments or questions they'd like?
Thank you for a thoughtful class. And that quote about civilization is not based on law, it's based on love. That was Prabhupada speaking when he was in Mauritius?
Yes. Yeah, if you go to Back to Godhead, July 1976, it describes a tour that Prabhupada was taking of East Africa, South Africa, and Mauritius. And when he was there, he was meeting with all these big people, and Prabhupada was preaching to them. And so what I have here is from Back to Godhead, which is a direct quote from Srila Prabhupada.
Wow.
When he was talking with him.
You just think of how, it's like that's how it is in every family, you know, in every business. Sometimes you hear about these business organizations that work so well because, you know, the top guy is just so kind. And even sometimes when he retires, and he'll give everybody, you know, a portion of the...
Mm.
And it just works, you know. Otherwise, you got people trying to cheat, and like you said, when people don't feel loved, then they break the law.
Right.
They don't feel that they're really being cared for. There's a whole problem in our society, really. All the problems stem from that.
Yes, that's a very keen observation. In our society, these things can't be neglected because law can't replace loving relationships either for staying together.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
I was thinking about, you mentioned about breaking law. Sukada was saying that if you're not loved, then you break the law. I was also thinking that how, when you feel the love, then you're also willing to break the law.
Okay, elaborate, please.
You mean like the rule?
I mean, not that I'm saying that we should break the law, but, you know, we know that a lot of us kind of broke the laws. You know, we loved Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada showed so much love. And for his sake, sometimes laws got broken. Again, I'm not saying that is the right thing to do, but yeah, sometimes that also happens. Out of love, we break the law.
Okay, thank you.
Exceptions to everything.
That's the Marmatik type of comment.
We'll come back.
You were just talking about this quote where Srila Prabhupada on this tour was talking to many leaders. And we see devotees like Bhakti Tirtha Swami who would talk to world leaders. And I was wondering, what is our role, or is there a role for us when it comes to what's mentioned here in this verse, which is specifically kings and administrators? Something I was thinking about, we just had our election season, and it seemed like all you can do is vote. And I was wondering, well, as devotees coming from a line that has this as part of its teachings, is there a role from that context that we have as well?
Yeah, there is. And it's good that you asked that, because I think that a lot of times we get too out there, you know, not practical. What can we do? But Mother Mukya, what she read this morning directly addresses that. She read about how don't underestimate even a little interaction you may have. We have the ability to inspire people. I know Divyanga or any book distributor will tell you that people report their lives have been changed. And you're just walking across a parking lot, happening to be in that place at a particular time, but it's serendipity, as the writer was saying. You're at the right place at the right time. The small thing can have tremendous influence on people's lives and impact like that. And especially if we go as representatives of Srila Prabhupada, of Lord Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they can use us in ways which are beyond our even thought or capability or thinking that we could make such an effect. We should have that in our mind about, as we go about our activities. You mentioned Bhakti Tirtha Swami. His quote that I always remember was that if miracles aren't happening in your life every day, then you're doing something wrong. So that means whatever we're doing, whatever, however big or small or little thing we're doing, we can have a great impact, and we have to have the faith that we do it, even if we don't recognize it. Even if we don't recognize it. We shouldn't be looking for gratification. I did. But we go about with the faith that whatever little thing we do, Krishna can use that in ways in which go beyond our thoughts. I promised Devi.
Thank you, Shesha Prabhu. So in Kali Yuga, it seems that there is a slightly different program, because Prabhupada has said, like, he's the demons and the devotees will, like, flourish in Kali Yuga, and it will be like a parallel track. They will both get stronger in Kali Yuga. It seems like he doesn't come to destroy the leaders in Kali Yuga necessarily.
Krishna?
Yeah.
Doesn't come to destroy the leaders in Kali Yuga. Well, he's come to, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to to create a revolution, destroying demoniac leaders, replacing them with Krishna-conscious leadership. There was a while even during ISKCON where the devotees were directly challenging the materialistic leaders with trying to force God consciousness to progress to God consciousness through political means. That's also been tried a bit in India, I think. Some devotees involved in some political activity. So, yes, you're right. We don't. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't come to kill them, as Nityananda Prabhu said. If you were going to kill them, then you'd have to kill everybody. But to change their hearts, just like Jagai and Mata, his hearts were changed. That is the mission of the Lord, and it's meant to go as high as possible. I mean, if you think about it, it's quite amazing that Tulsi Gabbard, you know, she's like running for president of the United States, debating all these guys on the stage, being part of the whole thing, being accepted and part of the whole thing. And she wasn't like self-conscious or timid or didn't think she didn't belong. She was, you know, I'm here, I've got some ideas, and I'm putting out ideas. And we haven't heard the last from her. And so that's a direct challenge to materialistic leaders made by devotees of the Lord. So let's see where it goes.
And also, won't like Kali Yuga progress? And, you know, in the Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto, you know, we heard how the government's going to tax the citizens to poverty, you know, eventually it'll get very bad, like due to the bad government.
Yeah. Therefore, Prabhupada said, again, he gave us something we could do about that. You should establish some farm communities or something, because the people who are running from the cities, they'll come to you. So he gave us something we have to do also. I saw Janamay Jaya was sitting here, I think at the beginning of class, wasn't he? Sitting there? You know, he's like, his life is dedicated to that. He's farming, actually. Maybe we should all be like him, farming, because people are going to come out of the cities desperate, running away from the high taxation and everything. And Prabhupada said that you can be there to meet them. I mean, that's a tall order. Let's hopefully we can just keep chanting Hare Krishna and do something.
I was just thinking how, you know, everything Prabhupada taught us, it's like so amazing, and sometimes you don't realize it, but it's making me think, just like when we cook, you know, we're cooking with love, and that's distributed in so many different ways, prasadam, you know, all over the world. And everything that, just like the story about the woman who, she made a tulsi skirt, and because Prabhupada was coming the next day, and when the devotees saw it, they were like, oh, this is terrible, you know? So she started crying, and her husband was really upset, and the next day Prabhupada came, and you know, he's looking around and he says, oh, who has made this beautiful tulsi skirt? So obviously Prabhupada was seeing the love and devotion that was made with. And I recently had an experience where there was on a Sunday, I had come to the temple and there was a woman there I never saw. So I started talking to her, and we met a couple of Sundays, really nice Indian woman, young Indian woman. And so, you know, I went away for Christmas and I came back. She had texted me. She said, oh, something really amazing happened. So I called her and I was like, well, what happened? She said that, you know, her husband, he had some kind of surgery, and she was helping him to go to the bathroom when he got home, and he started to faint. And she was in the bathroom. She couldn't get out. You know what I mean? Because he was really big. And so she was kind of holding him. So she didn't know what to do, but yet she remembered me telling her that when you chant, you know, Krishna's a person and that he will reciprocate. Because she had another mantra, you know, she's not a Vaishnava, but she's, you know, a devotee. And so she said, I just remembered what you said, and I started chanting, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And she said, and then immediately things started to happen. Like she was able to get the phone, she was able to call 911, they came and helped her. So I was like, wow, it's just such a simple thing to say, you know, that when you chant, you're chanting to a person, and Krishna reciprocates. And she saw that happen. So many little things that we say to people can have such a big effect.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for that. For your statement as well as your helping the lady so she remembered Krishna.
Thank you, Shesha Prabhu, again for nice class. I really appreciate every time I think about something, I get the answers from your class. I was just thinking the other day, what is our duty? What are we supposed to do? I'm sitting here wasting my time, like in this situation when it seems like what's happening in the world and so, and always thinking, well, we need to do something big and so, like as you confirmed the Mother Mukhya's reading, like even small things. And I'm thinking how Prabhupada said that we always have to come in like needle and come out as an elephant. So Srila Prabhupada just comes and here, take one cookie, take one maha mantra, and then look how many books, how many devotees, how many temples and deities. So it just makes me really feel comfortable and happy to see this.
Very nice. Thank you so much.
Prabhu, I was trying to understand what's the meaning of love versus, because in Bhagavad Gita another verse explains, those who are wise, intelligent, they see all this law or rules, regulation as a protection. And those who are not intelligent, they see rules, regulations as a restriction. So they react, they don't like it. But those who are actually intelligent, so I was thinking, is it the intelligence or is it the love or where is the connection? Or can you give me a little?
Well, I think it's the individual soul has to make a choice. And we can either make a choice to be rebellious, we can make a choice to be accepting the Lord's situation for us. So, as a conditioned soul, we are apt to make a choice between seeing a restriction or seeing the Lord's embrace, same thing. Prabhupada gives the example of the cat with her kitten. The cat with her kitten, with her mouth, carries the kitten from place to place. But that same mouth is death for the rat that the cat catches. So same thing. As you put in rule and regulations, it may be seen as an offering of love to the Lord or a restriction. Same activity. And it's up to us to choose which one we want. It's not that devotee in their life has no tribulations, has no sufferings, has no challenges. They will be there, but how a devotee sees them is different than how a non-devotee sees them. So we have to change our mentality. The element to change it is love. by seeing the Lord's love to us, we can reciprocate.
Thank you. One devotee is asking, is there a law book for Alachua Nyuraman Reti?
A law book?
Or some kind of that it guides the what's the rules, regulation, because you are emphasizing so nicely.
Well, there's Prabhupada's books, the law books for the next 10,000 years. There's the wonderful association of devotees. It's like we have the wonderful example of your good self. Throughout this pandemic, you've been here. You had the job of facing when people don't want to follow the rules. How are they told to keep the doors open, wear the mask, keep the social distance? You've taken that responsibility. It's not, you know, necessarily relishable that you want to go around telling everybody what to do all the time. But you've taken it because it's necessary. It's part of the rules and regulations of how we operate and why we're able to sit here. So we're thankful for you for taking that trouble. So is there a law book? No, but just and observe what the devotees do, try to follow what the authorities say, cooperate in that way, then everything will proceed nicely. Same point, if we don't follow, then all hell can break loose and then we may be restricted from coming to the temple. Who would want that?
Thank you.
I can't figure out a question or anything.
There's so many, you can just review it.
Carissa, can you say some more about our personal propensities or skills or inclinations in cooperation with modern society, being able to do that in Krishna consciousness for the benefit of society? Oh, is that Mother Mahavega Mahavishnu Priya? Yeah, well, we're not meant to be recluses, so we have to be able to relate to society. I can just say my one thing that I had the fortune in rendering service to Prabhupada right at the end, 1977. We were still going to colleges and distributing Prabhupada's books to professors and libraries. And we used to fit into society by wearing suit and tie and wig. And so one professor noted how I was dressed walking through the professor's office building. And he said later to me that, oh, I knew that you must have been a representative of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust because you always dress so nicely. It's a small example of how we interact with the world in their terms, but we give them Krishna consciousness. So I'm sure there are others that have other talents and abilities that are recognized in the material world. And the fact that a devotee is doing those things sometimes surprises people. But there's a lot of surprises. That surprise is often appreciation, not abhorrence. So whatever we do, should try to do it the best we can to please Guru and Krishna and please society as well. Anyway, it's past 9. I thought class went to 8:45, now it's going every day 9:15.
That was a nice class, that's right.
Thank you.
We love the speaker.
Going to write Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
so formal.
Steve Limoni?
Oh, Billy, that's it. Steve Limoni.
Perhaps there is a distinction between the Vaishnava engaging politics and Krishna consciousness and ISKCON as an institution which is dedicated towards promoting political activities. After all, Tulsi Gabbard did not run as a representative of a religious institution, but rather on the strength of her own personality and convictions. Well, Krishna consciousness is not just limited to institution. Krishna consciousness is meant to influence all spheres of human activity. So, we do that. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.